everyone, it's Danny Chambers here. This is the Vet Voices podcast, and I'm here with Paul Horwood. Paul is one of my friends who helps run the Vet Voices hiking group, along with Robin. Paul, do you want to introduce yourself? And we're talking today about the CMA. So introduce who you are and why you have an interest in this.
Yeah, thanks, Danny. Obviously, we're friends. We've known each other for many years now. I suppose the reason that we're on here, the reason I'm on here today and having a chat is perhaps to give a different view, a different idea, a different look at it, because I'm not a small animal vet. I know the CMA is predominantly looking at sort of companion animals, but my background, I've been an intern and resident at a university, so I've done a bit of academia. I've been an assistant in an independent practice. I've owned an independent practice. I've sold an independent practice to a corporate. I've worked outside of the industry. I've worked in L&D and leadership and management businesses. I've had businesses outside that have nothing to do with veterinary, and now I'm working for a corporate. So I suppose I've dipped my toe in lots and lots of different parts and sectors of the vet business, of the vet world, and sort of seen the good and the bad and how it works and how it doesn't. And so perhaps can have a think about it. And also, I've been around for about 25 years. I remember the last time the CMA, or what it previously was, had a look at predominantly the farm animal sector in the early 2000s, and again looked at medicine pricing and that sort of stuff. So perhaps we can sort of have a chat and a natter about those sorts of topics.
Very good. Well, that sounds like you've got a good broad experience from inside and outside the veterinary industry. So we'll try and draw down on that. So let's start from the beginning. What is the CMA and why are they looking into the veterinary industry?
Well, so again, this is just my opinions, my thoughts on it, purely talking for myself here. The CMA, I suppose, is, we probably all agree, maybe not all of us, but we live in a capitalist society. The whole idea is that you work hard, you come up with new ideas, you get paid, people can decide who they want. And it works because there are markets, and it works because there's competition. You don't have to just go to one person to get your car serviced. You don't have to go to one person to buy your food. You've got the choice, the consumer wins, and the consumer can take their pound and spend it where they want. And the benefit to that to society is that it encourages innovation, and it encourages people to come up with new businesses and new ways of doing things, perhaps cheaper or better, or it encourages competition. It means that different businesses have to compete. You can't sit back on your laurels and go, I just deserve to be paid. I deserve to have money because I'm whoever I am. And so the benefit of that is that's why I suppose capitalism has been quite successful in the last 100-200 years. But sometimes there can be problems. And so that's where the government or the market authority can come in and needs to make sure that the market is working. You don't have cartels, you don't have monopolies, you don't have a bunch of businesses all getting together going, I tell you what, let's keep it over £10. Well, you keep it over £10, I'll keep it over £10, we'll all keep it over £10. And then keeping it over £10. So there needs to be, just to make sure that there are no perverse incentives or monopolies or cartels, there needs to be a government regulation in there just to make sure that that is. So the CMA is the UK's version of that.
So the Competitions and Marketing Authority is there to ensure consumers have a choice at where they get their services or spend their money, and to ensure that businesses aren't running a monopoly, to make sure that there is healthy competition and that people can spend the money for the service that they want rather than having no choice because in their area, everyone's doing the same thing for the same price.
And that's absolutely a good thing, because if there was only one way and one place to do it, perhaps communism would be the absolute opposite of what we're talking about, where there is only one place to go. There is no incentive for anyone to innovate or come up with new ways of doing things, because what's the point? Sit back, get your money, everyone comes to you. When you've got consumer choice driving competition, people come up with new ways of doing things, and it pushes stuff on and it makes us better. So it is a good thing in general, in my opinion.
So they, CMA, regularly look at different businesses, different industries, different professions to ensure that there isn't any price fixing going on, or to make sure that consumers do have a choice in their area of who they want to spend their money with. Why are they looking at the veterinary industry at the moment?
Well, they go around and look at businesses and sectors. They dive in, they have a look, they decide whether it needs to have any more investigation, more time, money spent on it. And then ultimately, they will decide whether they need to tweak the rules, insist on different things to happen, insist on different business models, etc. The reason they're looking at the veterinary sector at the moment is probably because it's quite popular. It's been in the news a lot. It's a fashionable industry to look at. There's a lot of vet bashing out there. It's an easy one to complain about the pricing of veterinary fees. Perhaps off the back of COVID, there's been a huge boom in pet ownership, and perhaps that's now moved it up into more people's worries or more people's concerns. And again, we can look at inflation for many, many years. For 8, 9, 10 years, we've had very little inflation. Now we've got quite a lot of inflation. And so perhaps prices haven't been going up and now they are. Again, all of these things are sort of driving it up the priority list for the CMA to start looking into our industry. But that's not saying that there's anything wrong with the industry. It's just saying that there are concerns that they want to go ahead and investigate. I think, unfortunately, some people in the general public have decided that we are, just because we're being investigated, that's sort of proof that we are money grabbing, working as a monopoly, forcing the prices up, using our position to over-prescribe and over-diagnose, which I think hopefully most of us would agree is not the case. It's just where we're being looked at the moment. That's where we are.
So one of the key concerns is that prices seem to be going up quite quickly. And obviously, we've had quite high inflation compared to the last few years, as we've touched on, had a workforce shortage, a massive workforce shortage. We had COVID, which meant the pandemic puppies, was it 3 million households got puppies? There's a sort of perfect storm of having a shortage of vets, high inflation, a surge in a type of breed of dogs that require a lot of intervention and expensive intervention. And I guess that's all taking place on the back of a cost of living crisis. So people are feeling the pinch in other areas of their life as well. And the last thing they need then is a massive vet bill that they possibly weren't expecting. What's the next step with the CMA? So they've done a preliminary look at the veterinary industry. They decided that there needs to be a formal investigation. What, you were around for the last one. Could you just talk us through that? Because you were a farm animal vet in 2001. The CMA looked at farm animal products. Just to be clear for anyone listening to this, is only looking at dogs and cats, isn't it? Like small animal, horses and farm animal are not part of this investigation. So what was your experience in the farm animal sector in 2001? And what was the result of the CMA investigation? And then we'll bring it back to small animal to put it in context.
Yeah, so this is dragging it back 20 plus years now. But I was a young, keen farm animal vet, straight out of the RVC, and the CMA investigated, or what the CMA has become, was investigating, and particularly looking at farm animal this time, at that time as opposed to now. It went on for a year or so, diving into lots and lots of points, trying to work out. Because it is quite complicated. The medicine supply is complicated. And, you could argue rightly so. We are not prescribing Smarties. We are prescribing, medicinal products. But it is a complicated way of getting it through the wholesalers and to us and the pricing. And they felt at the end of it that we were cross-subsidizing our professional time by charging more for medicines, overcharging for medicines to support or keep our professional fees lower. And cross-subsidizing. And so they said, well, your markups are too high on the medicines. There's not enough competition in medicine supply. Everyone's buying it from their vet. So we now are going to force you to offer prescriptions for free. And I can't remember how many years it was, but it was for a number of years. We had to offer free prescriptions, and we had to put a sign up in our practices to say we will offer free prescriptions to anyone who asks. And what that did was that encouraged competition. Online pharmacies appeared, which hadn't really existed before, and farmers then could shop and change, move around. What it did, though, is, a business is a business. You have fixed costs, you have staff, you have an amount of money you need to make to cover the cost of the business. And so if you're no longer having the larger markups on the medicines because you're no longer able to do that, there's a lot more competition in that. What that did, and probably looking back in retrospect, it was a good thing. What that did is it made farm animal look more closely at what we charged for our professional time and charged appropriately for that. So it just moved where the profits were coming from in the business, I suppose. My recollection is that we had a lot more competition in the medicines market. Medicines pricing came down in farm animal sector, and then on the other side, we started charging for our professional time, perhaps more appropriately.
Because before that happened, it was quite commonplace for vets to go onto a farm, barely charge anything for their visit or time, because they knew that they would be selling a lot of, for example, mastitis treatments throughout the year. And so they subsidized those sales with their time, I guess. This model changed because of that.
And it changed. And perhaps it was a bit easier for us as vets to, I remember it was very easy to blame the price. Oh, well, I'm very sorry, but the price is the price and that's the medicine. You can blame the those pharmaceutical companies. Oh, dear. That's why the price is that. Well, in fact, actually, it was because of the markup that was on the medicines. And so, yeah, absolutely. We still need to make the same an amount of money to keep the business running, pay the staff, keep the lights on. It just moved where those profits were.
So when it comes to consumer choice, as we're talking about, the CMA are concerned that practices aren't being transparent about their pricing and that owners are struggling to make decisions. Now, obviously, we know as vets that it can be very difficult to work out the exact cost of what a procedure is potentially going to be, especially if it's, for example, if a sick dog comes to the consult room, you're not sure what's wrong with it. You might have to start with a blood test, which then might need some imaging, and then deciding if you do an ultrasound scan, it might then need an exploratory laparotomy, or it might need a liver biopsy. And you're dealing with so many unknowns that you can end up with quite a high bill of a load of procedures that when you first saw the dog, you didn't have a clue what was, how this was going to play out. And that's one reason it's really hard to give estimates. But I suppose one thing that the CMA are quite concerned about is that it's quite hard to actually for consumers to find prices for routine procedures. And for example, vaccinations, that has been brought up in some of the news reports. And I certainly had a look around where I live here. I Googled, and it's really hard to find online the price of a dog vaccination between different practices. I can't find it in nearly all the local practices at all. So if I was a new dog owner, new puppy, and I wanted to have a look at what a vaccine costs, I would actually struggle to find that here in Winchester and Hampshire. Is that the kind of thing the CMA are concerned about?
Yeah, so now we're moving into realms. Obviously, I'm a farm animal vet, so we're sort of perhaps moving into areas that I'm not that experienced in being able to talk about. But I suppose I can extrapolate it across and say, if you went into a business and you were unable to know how much that was going to cost, that would be worrying. If you take your car into the garage and they don't tell you how much it is, and then you get a bill, that would be concerning. If you go to a restaurant and there are no prices on the bill, well, I know that's where you like to eat, Danny. But those restaurants with no prices on the bill are a little bit scary to eat in. It is. I think it's useful to have those prices. I do remember that there are some concerns about how much advertising we can do for our pricing. Do we want two for one on antibiotics and that sort of thing? It is a little bit more complicated than just talking about pricing when you're buying widgets or when you're buying something from down the road. But if we look at our professional colleagues, certainly medicine and the law, you will be able to find the price of what you are going to buy. If you're doing private medical, you will be able to find the price. If you need to or want to go and talk to your lawyer, you will be able to find the price. So perhaps that is an area that we should be better at being able to explain and allow the clients to shop around. But your point at the beginning was absolutely right. Things change. It's not a car. It's a mammal. It's an animal. There is an awful lot of complication in there. Things change. Things alter. Being able to say it's going to cost X amount or Y is difficult because you don't know. And always having to stop and ask and check could be difficult in the middle of emergencies, etc. But perhaps we could have more routine, more standard things to give an idea of what level of price this practice charges.
Yeah, that's interesting. And I guess the other conclusions of the CMA sort of preliminary investigation, I can't speak today, what was that the legislation is outdated and needs updating. And certainly, as many people know, I'm on the Council of the Royal College of Veterinary Surgeons, the RCVS. And for a long time, we have been calling for legislation reform because people will be aware that the current Veterinary Surgeons Act, which is came out in 1966. And so the entire veterinary industry has changed since then. Actually, this is a very good point. The CMA are looking at the veterinary industry and not sort of veterinary professionals as individuals, aren't they? So, and the industry is more the business, whereas often as vets, we sort of think ourselves, as the profession. And something that's changed since 1966 is that you used to have to be a veterinary surgeon to own and run a veterinary practice. Whereas now you don't have to be a veterinary surgeon to own and run a veterinary practice. And certainly I think it's about 70% of vets now work for one of the sort of five large corporates. And because of the legislation being so out of date, that means the RCVS has regulatory authority over individual veterinary professionals working within a business, but they have no influence over the people who own and run those businesses. That's something we've been calling for a long time. And I suppose they've identified the reason that we so urgently need to update the Veterinary Surgeons Act.
For my entire career, people have been calling for an update to the Veterinary Surgeons Act. It needs Parliament to get involved. It probably is not that important in the grand scheme of things, in the grand scheme of running the country. So I can see that it is a hard one for the BVA and RCVS to try and support and push and get it through. It is an interesting one that the owners of businesses no longer have to be vets and therefore no longer are potentially regulated by the RCVS. Again, looking at other industries, the legal sector, again, about 10, 12 years ago, followed suit and did what we did 20 odd years ago and has gone from insisting that you have to be a lawyer to own a law practice to now saying you don't have to. And I suspect, it was capitalism, consumerism, markets, trying to bring in money from outside, trying to take a more old-fashioned industry and shake it up a bit. And I can see that there's some pros and cons for each. But again, in the legal sector, that has changed. And now there are a few law firms which are actually floated, that are actually on the, you can buy shares in and are floated on the stock market. Pros and cons of it, but it's something that the RCVS and the BVA have been talking about a long time. I've read about, and they'd like to get involved in changing the regulation. Will that make huge differences? Maybe. It requires a lot more thought, because it's not just going to be tweaking the Veterinary Surgeons Act, it's going to be rewriting it. And always the worry when you start rewriting things is that you throw the baby out with the bathwater, or you end up with a situation that you didn't perhaps want in the first place. I suspect when the RCVS changed the rules to allow non-vets to own vet practices, they didn't perhaps foresee the situation that we're in now. I suspect they just thought that maybe some vet nurses or some practice managers would end up buying into practices, and rather than a whole change and 60-70% of the market changing to be owned by corporates. So again, be careful what you wish for. We need to be very careful, and people much, much cleverer than me need to be involved in the writing of what that is, to make sure that we don't end up with unforeseen consequences again.
As if there's anyone cleverer than you, Paul. But yeah, there's you're exactly right. I mean, I guess this is something that might cause the government to have a look at it. The CMA come up with some conclusions that they're not happy with the regulation of veterinary practices. It might be something that pushes it up the parliamentary agenda, because it has been pretty low down on the priority list of everything that's been going on the last few years. But this would be really interesting to talk about the sort of market forces and sort of regulatory reasons why organizations like the CMA run these investigations. But certainly for vets on the ground and the discussion of vet voices, it's obviously caused quite a lot of stress. People feel like they're being attacked for charging too much, for being money grabbing. It's not a nice atmosphere at the moment, is it? When people feel as though the media, because the media love this kind of thing, aren't they? It's a really nice, easy clickbait headline to, vets being investigated for their prices. You and I are both trustees of VetLife, and we know that this is causing a heck of a lot of stress for people at the moment. Let's talk about, the help that's there if people are not enjoying this.
Yeah, I mean, so to start off with, I can see the general public, because going to the vets is an emotional roller coaster. It is perhaps not we sometimes forget that going to the vets is not a lovely thing, because we work there and we like going there and we've wanted to be vets for decades and we put the effort in to get there. But actually, going to the vets is quite an unpleasant experience, because you're probably going because your animal is ill. Your animal might end up dying. You will end up with a bill. It is an unpleasant experience. It's not something you wake up in the morning and go, yes, vets today, awesome, off we go. So for the general public going in, it is emotional, there's money involved, and so you can see why that gives you a quite a high pressure situation, where anger and emotion and vitriol and bullying and all that sort of stuff can come out. It's not an excuse, but it is a reason for it. It's definitely not an excuse,
especially in the backdrop of a cost of living crisis. If people are struggling anyway, and suddenly the dog's sick and it needs investigation, and you don't know how much it's going to cost, that's often the last thing you need in your busy life, isn't it?
And you're going to take it out, unfortunately, on the vet, on the receptionist, on the nurse, on the front of house staff. Shouldn't be allowed, shouldn't happen, but you can understand how it happens. And unfortunately, because we're vets, you know, we probably, as vets and nurses in this profession, we probably didn't go into the industry to move numbers around and run an Excel spreadsheet and get lots of money and that side of it. We through vet school, through nursing training, it's all been about the care and the clinical care and supporting the animals. And now, unfortunately or fortunately, we're now in a situation where we have to talk about money with someone who is emotional. And that's perhaps not a skill set or an area that we're that comfortable with. And then people start criticizing us. And because we're vets and nurses and that's our entire DNA, and you know, we're like a piece of rock with vet or nurse running all the way through us, we take it very personally. And it really hurts when people make sweeping statements like, you're money grabbing, you've just increased that to rip me off, how dare you, and start really having a go at us. And in a way that perhaps a lot of other jobs you wouldn't take it home, because you can separate your job from you and your day-to-day and your work life, we in the veterinary profession do seem to take it home with us, because we are so, our DNA is so caught up in it. And so when people have a go at vets and when people have a go at us, we take it home, and that worry, that anxiety, that stress, etc., builds. And as Danny said, we're both on vet life together, and the anxiety and the worry and the stress and the pressure and the unpleasantness is impacting our profession.
And when someone criticizes you as a vet in any capacity, as you just touched on, it's because it is your identity. It's not just a job. As they say, they might just be annoyed about a specific incident or procedure, and they've made a complaint. They don't recognize that for you, when your whole identity is being a vet, they're saying that you are an incompetent person as an individual. It reflects on your whole life, doesn't it? Which is why we often end up taking it so personally. And it's really important to try and put it in context. So yes, so if anyone is struggling, Vet Life is there 24/7 online and on the phone as well.
And the benefit of Vet Life is you can ring up and you can talk to someone who's within the profession. It's anonymous. You won't know who they are. They won't know who you are, but they will have an understanding of what you're going through. They will understand the CMA and the impacts that that's having, if that's what you want to have a talk about. But give them a ring up and have a chat. They will be able to have a chat and just allow you to talk through any issues, maybe signpost you to further help if that's appropriate.
That was really interesting, Paul, just to get an overview of, firstly, veterinary industry, how it fits into society, and why organisations like the CMA look at the veterinary industry and other industries as well, and the reason behind it. So thank you for your time. I really appreciate that.
No problems. Just one final point, really, before we go. It's probably a hard thing to say, but don't worry about it. It's not necessarily, we're feeling at the moment, perhaps in veterinary, that people are having a go at us, that CMA is having a go and attacking us. It's not a bad thing. They're going to look at the industry. They're going to make recommendations. They may even insist on a few things. But from my understanding and having worked through it 20 odd years ago, those recommendations actually benefited the industry in the long run. They are not saying that vets are horrible money grabbers. Unfortunately, that's what the press and some of the lovely general public have assumed or taken it. The CMA is just looking and saying there are some bits and pieces in the industry that might need changing. The market might need tweaking to ensure that competition and innovation and new ideas and new ways of thinking are not squashed. And that's not necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, it certainly increases public confidence in the industry, doesn't it? Once they've had a report and the recommendations have been implemented. So, well, thank you, Paul. We will chat to you again, I'm sure.
Yeah, thanks.